I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to episode 80 of The Nero Show. In today's episode,
the Ciota Bike Expo is on. We chat through a wrap-up of all the things we've seen on the ground.
The Van Rysel sells out in a matter of hours, but no one seems to be able to get their hands on the bike.
We've got Trainer Road going back down some bizarre nutrition advice. I give them a debunking.
And when should you get a coach? We discuss the pros and cons. All right, let's get into it. So it turns out once a year, a little seaside village in California turns into the most interesting place to show your cycling wares, Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
Monterey, California, the Sea Otter Classic, which I thought was just a bike race, but seemingly has turned into a massive...
Screw the bike race.
Yeah, exactly. No, massive bike expo.
Expo. Read
all about it. And it kind of dominated my news feeds, both sort of on YouTube and everywhere else around it. Where do you want to start with this? So there was just an absolute tidal wave.
Let's start on Dave Arthur. You had a good point because he's done, he's already done 8 videos from it.
So and counting.
And counting, right? Yep. And the last one was 14 hours ago, so they're still going.
Yep.
So instead of putting them all in one, he's just do one video on a topic and put them out. But you brought up a good point in that his channel is a good way to gauge what the YouTube crowd are interested in. What do we care about actually? So let's take a look here. Now, first one that stood out to me, uploaded one day after each other. So one was 4 days ago and one was 3 days ago. Almost identical thumbnails. And it's one is called the hottest new gravel bikes at Sea Otter Classic. And then the other one is the best new road bikes at Sea Otter Classic. Same thumbnails, pretty much identical titles. The road one's losing. The road one was uploaded 4 days ago. It's on 29,000 views. The gravel one was 3 days ago, and it's on 31,000 views. So clearly there's more people interested in what gravel bikes are coming out this year.
It could be that maybe we're reading too much into it. I had more of a kind of broad look at all the content that was produced on Sea Otter Classic, and the mountain bike channels smash this.
Okay.
So like GMBT or whatever it is. There's a few other ones in there. They're running 100,000 views per Sea Otter Classic sort of walk around video, whereas us roadies look like we're running kind of 15, 20, 25 area for most of the stuff. Like for me though, that Van Rysel, he did that Van Rysel video with an interview with the guy, which we're going to talk about a bit, but like that thumbnail and everything, oh, Van Rysel, because it's like the hot property when it comes to cycling YouTube frothiness, what's going on with this brand. And I would have thought that one would take off, but it's sort of stagnated around 20, which is still a lot of views, but just in terms and comparing it to some of the mountain bike stuff that I've seen in the last couple of days is not quite at the same level. Just quickly, I did the same thing with who are they? GCN, that's right. Big channel over here. So they did their first one, and it was literally a Joe ripoff. It was the Dreammaker, you know, Dreammaker, the handlebars, everything. It's like 150,000 views. I honestly reckon that bike is thumbnail YouTube cocaine. Can we use it? Can we just please just get 10, 15K views?
We did use it.
Have we?
Yeah, when we did the guest episode with Joe, that's the one I used.
Oh, it is too. And that smashed it. It is. It's like a 10-15% boost on any video that handlebar specs configuration. But yeah, so a flood of flood of content. I think there's some talking points in all this. Where do you want to start with it?
I'm going to go straight in the deep end here because GCN kind of uncovered or highlighted a certain product which then created this whole shitstorm, which I wanted to chat through, get your thoughts on. So they went to the Elite wheel stand and showed their new, I think it's the Helix wheel set. So they've got that wavy rim design that sort of some brands using Zip have used, the Princeton Carbon Works have used, and they're using it now. Then they highlighted this hub.
Mm.
And they were spinning it, or Simon was spinning it around, and it's their, they said it's this patented new hub that's going to come with this dual ratchet. So usually in the free hub, when you spin it around, the pawls engage on one side of the ratchet. And with this new system, with this dual ratchet, it engages on both sides. So here you have double the amount of engagement. You thought, okay, that's interesting. Elite have come up with a new hub. That's pretty impressive for a Chinese brand to come up with a hub. And then came up on Instagram and it came up in the comments on that video, some allegations that the Elite hub was actually a copy of a German design hub from a brand called Qvist.cc on Instagram. So Qvist have a patent pending in China, US, and Germany, which also covers Europe, for a dual ratchet hub.
Their patent is pending.
Their patent is pending. It hasn't been approved yet. Yeah. But even if your patent hasn't been approved yet, it's still, as far as I'm aware, it's still in bad. You're potentially getting yourself into legal trouble if you copy a patent pending product. If that then gets approved, you then have to pay it back and you can't use it. So you would never really copy a patent pending product if you thought it had any chance of getting approved. So there was a bit of a storm came up because of this. So let me talk you through it and see what you think about this sort of Chinese brand copying a European brand's hub. Now, I messaged Qvist and asked for a bit of a background on what the timeline is here. So they said they presented their design at Eurobike in 2022. So right. 2 years ago in July 2022. 2 months later, so in September 2022, Elite Wheels applied for a patent in China for a dual ratchet hub. Qvist said, we applied for our patent in Germany with additional coverage in the EU, USA, and China in December 2021. So before they showed it at Eurobike, they had already applied for a patent. For some reason, their patent got approved in China already. Ours is still on hold. Well, we know it doesn't take a genius to figure out that a Chinese company gets a patent approved or very quickly. Theirs still is still pending. So let me just lay this out here in sort of layman terms. What's happened here? It looks like this German company designed this dual ratchet hub. They've gone and showed their wares at Eurobike. Look at our hub. We've got a patent pending. 2 months later, seemingly Elite Wheels have basically back engineered a very similar form of dual ratchet hub, filed for a patent for it in China. Boom, stamp of approval. They've got the Chinese patent for it. And it appears like they have just ripped off Qvist's design. And then I asked, because they did mention in one of their videos that they did some, when they were looking to manufacture the hub, they did do some, they went down averages of doing contract manufacturing and not doing it in-house. And I said, did you, because I thought, well, as we've spoken with Joe, sometimes if a brand like this wants to get their hub produced in Asia, they might send the designs to a factory. Mm. Someone emails that to someone down the road, someone else, a year later it pops up.
Did you see this?
Yeah. Mm. They said that they never contacted anyone in Asia to produce the hub. So I'm guessing Elite have, if they have done this, have just totally redesigned it from their own specs. They said, we never made any of our prototypes or production outside of Europe. And they said that, yeah, their Elite Wheels isn't a one-to-one copy of the hub, but it's very similar. Nevertheless, the Elite Wheel hub clearly violates their IPR although patent pending. And they said they are acting in bad faith since they were told from several sources that our patent application exists and is prior to their invention.
Interesting. So... two ways I could take this. First is, so is there any, Elite Wheels are a sponsor of GCN?
They advertise on GCN. They do paid promotions on GCN. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
One interesting topic out of that. The other is, okay, well, generally, Chinese company copying a patent of a mainstream Western brand. Now, I gather that Qvist, so what they're called, probably not like massive. Yeah. Is where do I want to take this? Isn't this the whole thing holding the cheap group sets back? Is it the mainstream brands, the SRAMs and Shimanos, have this absolute ironclad, you can't touch our patents, so hence we get to charge whatever we want and create these products that no one can go and touch, and companies like L2 everyone's got to try and back engineer products to try and give us something that works at a price that's manageable. So I don't know. There's like I'm kind of torn with this because these sort of patents potentially are the things that hold back competition when it comes to all these other components that we get screwed with. But also, like, here's a company trying to engineer and create new things that have just been woken up one day and gone, hang on, that's ours.
Yeah.
What did you do? So, yeah, I don't know enough about patent law.
Well, that's the thing. We'd be here for hours discussing the ethics of patents and are they fair? Do they stifle innovation if you don't have them, things like that. My thing with this is we see a lot of copying in the bike industry. I mean, Zip have the waved rim. Princeton Carbon Works have the waved rim. Now, Chinese brands have the waved rim. Did Princeton Carbon Works copy Zip? Is there a patent? I mean, there's so much crossover anyway that usually when this sort of thing pops up, I don't care too much because there's already so much copy. I mean, look at the Campagnolo group set. It's got the removable batteries from the derailleur. They basically copied SRAM gearing with the 10-tooth in the cassette. Can't be copied SRAM. Okay, maybe didn't violate a patent, but in spirit, everyone's copying everyone. I do feel quite bad for Qvist in this example because this is a very niche part, a meticulously engineered, a very specific thing that you wouldn't, like, to me, and based off what they've said, it looks like they've just gone, that looks like a good idea. A quick engineering department, see if you can copy it. And I do feel bad because this is very niche, small part. And so I do think it's a bit of a shame.
You have highlighted it, Jesse, on this forum, and I think that's potentially all legally I'm willing to allow you to do. but are we done with that hub? Because there's another hub I want to talk about.
What other hubs are we looking at?
So speaking of lockdown patents, this is the first time I've seen the classified hub. Well, in fact, this is the first time I've been presented with a bike which had the classified hub on it. And was subsequently found myself going, oh, I can get around that. So let me just quickly explain. So Dave Arthur did a video where he basically rode from San Francisco to Monterey and up pops the Envy Fray, I think it is, which is their endurance road bike, year of the endurance bike. And he's on a one by. And I'm thinking, go, Dave. Good man. I've influenced Dave Arthur. He's on a one by. Fantastic. Let's see you grind up those Bay Area hills. Turns out, after a few kilometres, that he has the classified hub blips in there and he has essentially a two-by system at the front, obviously all based in the hub. I'm not going to go into the details of what the classified hub is.
I'm sure most people now know the classified hub. It's basically a front derailleur in your rear hub.
Yep. But this is the first time I've seen it fully integrated, not into some sort of slop proprietary back engineered type thing. It's on a really nice group set on a really nice bike that just worked and fitted in seamlessly. The backstory to this is it does seem that now Envy have quote unquote partnered, I don't know what that means, with Classified to actually produce these. So you can, when you buy this Fray bike through your Envy dealer, you can order it with a Classified hub. And I got to say, this is the first time I've looked at this and gone, you know what? That's got Chris Miller written all over it. I could totally get around this.
For gravel, yes. The thing I still have with the classified hub and that I haven't quite been able to get to the bottom of is how much friction is that adding? Because that was always the thing for road. I remember Campanuts used it and then Hambini said it was terrible resistance-wise and then I think Peak Talk said, oh, maybe it's not that bad, and then classified said, it hardly adds any friction. I don't know how much resistance that's adding, but if it's sucking 3 to 5 watts, maybe gravel ride, you don't care. In which case, Brent, For road, I don't know. I still feel like the jury's out on the classified hub, but for what he's doing on it, I mean, yeah, I'd use it 100%.
What do you think of the concept though? Because it's interesting, like we're talking about the patent stuff. Like it is, because as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, classified's the only one doing this, trying to push this into the mainstream market.
So Magine make
well,
one.
That's it. That's exactly where I'm thinking here. Like this is what we need Magine.
What about the radars? You had the Garmin Varia radars, and now every Chinese company has a radar. I mean, it's just...
This is where I can see, this is where it needs to happen to me. We need a flood of 30 of these all of a sudden, and then suddenly things get good. Because, yeah, I really like the... I don't know, it's weird. It's not something that we need. Like, it's not going to revolutionize cycling, but I do feel it moves the conversation forward. Does that make sense?
I don't agree. I think it could be something you need, especially if it allows you to have more extreme gear ratios and you're covering a broader range of gears than you can with the chain rings. So you've got a bigger hard gear and an easier gear. Potentially you'd be looking at someone with a classified hub and you've got your old school, your double chain ring going, I can't keep up here.
Yeah.
Like I'm getting dropped.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that it's just a nice to have. It might take a little while, but I can see it. I mean, I'm looking at your bike there, right? Your road bike. Friction aside, imagine if you could have the equivalent of making that a 56 or a 36.
Yep. Sick.
You're done.
Yep.
I mean, the front derailleur is done.
As I said, I looked at it and went, that's a Chris Miller bike. And the other thing was, okay, well, let's assume then you could, I don't know the answer to this, but if you're a frame builder and you can look at a frame and go, well, actually, there's no obligation to have, we have no intention of having a front derailleur on this bike. How does that change the way you build this frame? Does that change the shapes of it? Does it change the way where you put the carbon, et cetera, et cetera? Does it mean you can stiffen up certain areas? I don't know the answer to that. But the minute you're able to remove like a coat hanger off your bike like that, surely there's some changes to be made. I wonder though if the group set manufacturers, this gets to a point where they push back on it. You know, where they maybe they do like lock down.
Like a shit. We're going to make $200 less a group set because we're not having to supply a front derailleur.
Yeah. I mean, SRAM are just about to release this sort of SRAM Red stuff, this new SRAM Red, and their big selling point is going to be, we've just made the front derailleur shifting awesome. We've made it Shimano-esque. Well, imagine in 6 months' time you turn around and go, well, actually, we don't actually need those.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah.
Classified, I'd 100% shill. Get me on one.
They've kind of gone quiet. Mm. It blew up, what was it, a year and a half ago? I'm hoping they've just been in the background working quietly, doing their thing. And
someone's muzzled Tom
back
Boonen.
Boonen
was mouthing off a bit too much.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. No, he's good for creating headlines, but I wasn't sure he was great for actually answering questions.
Okay. Mm. Right. No, it's one to follow, I think. We were chatting a couple of days ago about the people on the stalls and who's doing the good presentations, who's a bit flat, not selling the products too well, who's really knows the details, is really good with it. I mean, who stood out for you? Who was the top, the cream of the crop expo man? Any standouts? Any particular duds?
I don't want to go down that route.
No?
Yeah, most of them were duds.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
To me,
not
unfortunately. I don't want to go too much into this. I get why this exists. It's for people walking around to network and all that kind of stuff. Most people aren't expecting Dave Arthur or GCN to turn up with a camera and put it in their face. And,
aren't they?
Yeah, well,
they freaking should be. What do you mean? That's the whole point of
That's the whole point of it from my perspective. But maybe that's not the actual point of it. You know, the only reason we're seeing this is because that's exactly what's happening. But to them, it's an afterthought, which is stupid. Like, I wonder whether these people are paying to get their 3-minute bits on Ben Delaney's video or Dave. I mean, I think they should, because this is the best advertisement they're going to get for the next 12 months. They're going to get 3 minutes to talk to punters like us about their new products. Fantastic. All they have to do is set up a stall. I just find that the people that often put in front of that camera as like some guy from an agency who's paid by the hour to sit at the expo. The two that I thought were really good, which I want to talk about, is the L2 one and the Decathlon one.
Okay, yep, yep. Let's start on the Van Rysel.
Okay.
Does it mean that the Van Rysel guy?
Yep.
Yep, okay, yep.
Yeah, it was really good. I actually wrote his name down, Pete Lazaru, or Lazaru. He was kind of involved in it. Okay. I was super interested to hear this stuff because this is on the back of Van Rysel have done their first pre-sale. Is that what we're going to call it?
They did their first release. Yeah,
first release.
You could buy the team, full team spec.
Sells out.
Gone.
Sells out.
Is that...
Let me just finish.
Like 10 in stock so everyone just had to buy the Ultegra one and made news because it
let
sold
me just,
out?
Let me just say what Pete was saying, right? So there's lots of chat about, he was saying about, we liaised with the pros, we really worked with the team to make this bike, blah, 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 blah. We've heard all that crap before. We don't need that. That's not your selling point. The purpose of doing this project is to show Van Rysel makes high-performance products that are accessible. And this is the key to this brand. It's, yeah, you've ticked the box now with the bike, absolutely. But these are accessible bikes is where you will be, where this whole thing will be won and lost. Because when we first thought about these Decathlon bikes, I'm sure you're a bit like me, we just thought, oh, this is going to be a bike in a Decathlon store. That's the most accessible thing you could imagine. Turns out that's not really the case. So at this stage, we're looking at these pre-sales. Now, pre-sales, which are geo-blocked from what I can understand, like you're on waiting lists, you sign up for pre-registration. He mentions this stuff about like working with dealers in North America and places outside of Europe. But it doesn't take a genius to think, well, dealers, like, what's a dealer going to make out of a Van Rysel brand? Who are you going to work with in that situation? Because, you know, we had the Factor guy sitting there telling us that a dealer takes this amount and a retailer takes this amount. Well, that's not going to work in the Decathlon space. So
unless the price goes up 30%.
Unless the price goes up 30%.
So retailer can get, yeah, right.
My concern with this product is it turns into sneakers and watches. A product that has a recommended retail price but never sells for that recommended retail price because it's always such a massively limited actual release that it's all about the aftermarket. Like a Jordan 1 is recommended retail price of $220. They don't sell for $220. They'll sell for triple that, quadruple that. Purely because of just the demand of it and the limited supply of it.
Okay. I mean we saw that as well because the top spec one got released and sold out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
did you hear about this? Were you emailed?
Yes, it was in. I'm not on mailing list. All I heard about it was when I think GCN News did an article, and it was Van Rysel sold out.
So you had to be a member. From what I gathered, you had to be a member of Decathlon, but that was geographically based and only certain people in certain countries got
But they sold out.
Yeah. So the demand's going to be massive.
Yeah, but there's no – yeah, but maybe I'm stretching what you're saying, but I'm with you in that it's all well and good having this really competitive product that's really aggressively priced. Yeah, but if you can't buy it, it's vaporware. It's just nothing. I mean, when I checked – on the website. Now, I didn't go through every country and figure out where I could buy it. It did appear like the Ultegra models were still in stock. It was the top model was out of stock. So they had some models still in stock last time I checked. But, you know, the one the team's riding, which is the one that people a lot of the time want to get. Yeah, it's if you can't buy it.
But this to disrupt the industry, it has to I'm thinking getting a new bike.
Well, Dave Arthur's video said, will Van Rysel destroy other bike brands? Your next bike, Arrow. Well, not if it's not in stock.
No.
You'll be, off to get a Canyon.
Well, that's it. Because if your model is essentially the same as Canyon, that you're going to be – I mean, they did talk about things like we're going to have a store in London. You know, they're really going to push this brand. But again, this to me, it's just – I'm calling it. It's going to be a Euro brand that we don't see anywhere else in the world. And it's
– Are you surprised that – you would have to talk to them. We'd just be speculating. How could they not get this figured out before – The pro season started. Your bike's out there. Well, come on. What's going on?
It comes back to this thing of it. They don't care. This is a Euro sport. This is decathlon. They're a Euro based. They don't really have a market share in the US. They're pretty limited here. They make their money in France. They make their money selling bikes to Guillaume in Lyon, not Chris.
No, we need to get them out. So you know we got Panda Podium. We need Frog Podium.
Oh,
so we get the need the Van Rysels coming over because you can't get them anywhere else. I just wanted to quickly add. Sorry, I forgot to say that with the Van Rysel one, I did about the guy actually presenting in the video. He didn't do some whole spec sheet read thing, which I thought was quite good. He seemed really genuine about the brand and basically conveyed that over. Here's what we're trying to do. The team's worked really hard. This is the price point of our products. We think they're competitive. We appreciate your support. I thought it was really good not to be in there. Well, it's 894 grams and it's the stiffness. And he didn't really go down that route. And I think for a video like that, where you can go and look up the specs somewhere else, I liked that approach. Just making you like the brand.
They have ticked absolutely every box here. They've nailed it. They've made the best product. They made a great looking product. They've got the teams frigging running absolutely brilliantly with this product. They look like they enjoy using the product. Just get the product out. is my issue with this.
Yep.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Which does bring us on to L2. Similar sort of discussion, really, in the sense. This was, again, this is the first time I've seen someone who works for L2 talk about their product. Just from actually, he covered a lot of bases in this discussion, didn't he?
He did. I mean, he was talking COVID babies. He was talking domestic market. He was like speaking with Joe from China Cycling. Like he was given the full read on what the brand's about, where they want to go to, how many they've sold. He says that they've sold 1 million group sets. It was interesting chat. I have one concern though with the product and making it. They're clearly focused on the domestic market, 100%. Making that it was, to that- sell there. The domestic market in the vast, vast majority of the riders that they would be making that group set for aren't going to be putting it through what a racer in Belgium or some domestic A-grade rider in Australia is going to be putting it towards. And that's my concern, especially because they're releasing the whole group set because they're going to be doing cassettes, chains, crank sets, the whole thing. So my concern would be they're making it good enough so an entry-level COVID baby in China who's never done sport in their life can ride it. Not so Jesse Coyle doing a full domestic season at the level that I'm at would be putting it through. And that's where I go,
I think
why would they make the group set for me to use? But there's how many Jesse Coyles are there in domestically in China racing around.
So he said that, Jesse, and he said it pretty straightforward. He said when Dave asked, how do you feel about when you're competing with SRAM and Shimano? He said, we're not competing with that crowd. Our crowd's different. Our crowd are doing bike exercise, Jesse. Quote, bike exercise. Now, I would argue you don't do bike exercise, nor do you intend to do bike exercise. So a product, there are lots of products designed for bike exercise. An Apple Watch, I think, is very good for bike exercise. It's not good for Jesse Coyle. And you're dead right. This product might end up being robust enough because it really might just not be that hard to make something that works at the end of the day. We're not friggin' sending people to the moon, just creating a bike component. But, yeah, it's not going to go through the testing. And but you know that. You know you are going to be testing this product forever, really. I mean, that's the way this is coming. I wasn't surprised by that, but I was certainly most taken by that. And it was pretty clear to me that the domestic market is king for them. He also made the comment that they've just received a new bit of investment. All right, what did you guys see Otter, anything else we missed? Let us know down below. A quick episode from sports micro nutrition brand Pillar Performance. Traditional nutrition products like hydration and carbohydrates will take you through to the finish line, whereas Pillar's mission is to get you to the start line in the best condition, over and over.
In this episode, Pillar wants to bring awareness to the benefits that magnesium supplementation can have for you as a cyclist, particularly as it relates to your sleep and recovery. Do you have trouble getting to sleep each night, or do you suffer from reduced sleep quality, particularly after your biggest training days? If so, magnesium supplementation can help improve all areas of your sleep by regulating melatonin production and reducing cramps that interrupt your sleep quality. Pillar's Triple Magnesium is a 300 milligram blend of absorbable forms of magnesium that tastes great and is Inform Sport batch tested to be free from banned ingredients.
If you would like to try Pillar today, get 15% off by using code Nero at pillarperformance.shop, or for North American viewers, head to thefeed.com/pillar and enter code Nero for 15% off.
Trainer Road. God, it's been a while. Since we've gone on Trainer Road, they get quite a few guests on, and usually, you know, I think majority of the information they put out is pretty good. They had a podcast recently with a guest, and I have to talk about it because I can't let this slide. So I'll send you the snippets from the chat so you can sort of put in what this guy said. What he's saying there is that you shouldn't snack on an apple or a banana. That's unhealthy. You should eat beef jerky. You're hungry.
Oh, we've gone that route.
Yep. So, I mean, where do I, on what level do I disagree with this on? Can I just give you like what, just debunk? Now, this is a guy with a PhD in nutrition. So he's spent a lot of money to spend a lot of years at university to figure out that eating apples is unhealthy. So I'm almost dumbfounded that this information still floats around. You could not even look. I feel free to not go down the rabbit hole and just. I could just say, Chris, having an apple as a snack's healthy. It doesn't really require dissecting, does it?
No.
You wouldn't have thought so.
No.
But clearly, I'm going to do it because this guy has said eating apples is unhealthy and bananas. So, the whole premise of what he's saying here essentially is that because apples have sugar, if you eat an apple, you'll get this big insulin rise, and you don't want to have your insulin going up and down all throughout the day, and therefore you should just eat beef jerky instead of apples. Okay. If you're not diabetic, simply having a bit of an insulin increase because you ate a carbohydrate food, I would just disagree on that. That is unhealthy. I would just disagree on altogether. But he's wrong on so many other levels. But let's assume you were trying to avoid your blood sugar going up to some degree. Well, firstly, apples and bananas are low GI. The low GI foods is not eating a bag of lollies. There's also this thing called the insulin index of foods. And that's where they've done in research, give you 1,000 kilojoules of a food, measure the insulin response, and then you get your insulin index. So even if you were concerned about insulin, what's the difference in insulin response between eating apples and eating beef, for example? Any guesses? What's going to raise your insulin more?
I would suggest the apples.
Yeah, you would have thought so because there's sugar in apples. Mm-hmm. Well, if you eat 1,000 kilojoules of apples, the insulin index is 59. The insulin index of beef is 51. Pretty on the scale of foods, it goes up above 100. That's very close. Very so close. Even simply eating beef, if you're worried about insulin, causes a rise. It raises your insulin. Mm. So even on that point, he's wrong. And that's eating 1,000 kilojoules of apple, which is like two big apples. It's quite a lot. Bananas, for some reason, even though bananas are still low GI, but bananas do cause a higher insulin response. So the insulin index of 1,000 kilojoules of banana is 81. So if you're concerned with insulin and you're eating plain banana, he's got a point there. But the apples to beef comparison, the insulin index is basically the same.
Mm.
So even on that fact, I don't know if he's ever looked up the insulin index. I'm guessing he hasn't, because the insulin index of apples and bananas is basically the same. So he's wrong on that front anyway. And also just this, the way he said it was, well, you got to be careful because, you know, you don't want to get this big insulin response. I mean, a banana has 20 grams of carbs. An apple has about 20 grams of carbs. Like one apple is, one medium banana is about 400 kilojoules. You've got fiber in there. To think that you're going to have an apple and get this huge insulin response is so wrong. And I just wanted to point that one in particular out, because I think for anyone that listened to that podcast, there would be people out there having their apple at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because they get a bit hungry, now second guessing if that's healthy to do. And the guy, yeah, just putting that information
out there. Are there really? Like, I just find that, who are these people becoming diabetic from eating apples?
There are none.
I must admit, it's like anything, I'm sure, but like this show, I go through phases with Trainer Road, but just, there can just be too much detail sometimes to life. It's like I was like, oh, let's have some training chat this week. And I was like, oh, okay, here's one for you. Should I do three four-minute VO2s? Well, I can't find a four-minute hill, so can I do 4 3-minute VO2s? And you're like, that's a Trainer Road podcast. Yeah, it's like,
I'm not answering that.
You're not answering that. And that's right. It's just, what are you talking about? Just go out and do it and go home and rest and it's fine.
Mm. But it doesn't take much because this guy's got a PhD.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hear him say that and you go, insulin, oh shit, oh, maybe I shouldn't eat that apple. I mean, that's out there. And the problem was, this was just a guest that Trainer Row got on. They didn't push back on it. There was no other guest to have a discussion. It was just, he just said it and they moved on. And
I'm super surprised Trainer Row have been like the high carb poster child.
Yeah, they've really...
Like the last couple of years.
They have.
I'm super surprised by that.
Yeah. So there's just one other thing that he said as well that got me, and that was really eating disorder-esque, and was that he's saying you need to eat a lot of uncooked vegetables. You need to eat uncooked vegetables with every meal. It's super important.
Mm.
Just eat, if you're eating vegetables, you're doing well. If they're cooked or uncooked, imagine obsessing that, you know, the vegetables you're eating are cooked and that it's like, oh my God, it's just nauseating hearing it. Anyway, and so his solution was, he said, well, because he's worked with athletes and he says, how do I get them to do this? Well, I told them to buy a tub of spinach and leave it in the fridge. And every time you make a meal or you go past the fridge, you reach in and you eat a handful of raw spinach. Isn't that called an eating disorder? Every time you walk past the fridge to have a handful of spinach? I mean, that's an eating disorder. If you do that, you have an eating disorder. You're not eating meals. You're obsessed about some minute part of your diet. And I think to put that out there is, I don't know if he was just, I'm giving the benefit of that. Maybe he was saying that as an anecdote to get a point across, but that's not how I got it. I got that as he was giving out advice. And I think that's really bad advice. Just try and eat a lot of vegetables as if you can, whether they're cooked or uncooked, or if one meal doesn't happen to have vegetables and you have them with dinner, you're doing better. You're doing fine. Like, do not eat spinach every time you walk past the fridge. I'm putting that out there. Anyway, that's all I had for that. I just had to. I couldn't listen to it and not comment on it here.
I mean, I completely agree with you. So I don't really have anything to add more than surprise that was on Trainer Road. I would have thought that was a Joe Rogan.
Not a
Trainer Road.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of advice, I noticed this week I actually saw a video on YouTube which was titled "Beginner to Moderate Cycling Milestones: Is Coaching Next?" It was a cool little video from a guy here in Sydney, the Moderate Cyclist. Go give him a follow or a shout or a like or something. Nice little video about his riding. He'd gone and done peaks. I don't know exactly how old the fella is, but I would argue in his 40s, we'll say. But I thought he actually asked an interesting question, which I reckon is a pretty common question. This is someone who's clearly come to the sport a bit later, a bit like myself. So this is different to junior athletes, I would very much say. This is more a question for people who have started riding. Got the Lycra on, they're starting to do a few fondos, got a little group of mates that they might ride with every now and again, it's semi-competitive, and should they get a coach? You know, there's plenty of this content out there online telling them to do different training plans, this training plan. It would be an absolute minefield for someone, the amount of information out there. It's not really a question you can answer concretely, but is there a... You know what? I just need a coach.
Yeah. I think there's one thing I'll get to, but firstly, there are some people that I think coach that don't struggle to be coached. And it's actually the really social ride oriented person that has it's Tuesday morning bunch, it's Wednesday Lapa, it's Saturday Akuna. Like, they've probably already got 4 rides of the week nailed on year round. And then, so if they get a coach, the coach is kind of working with, you know, maybe they've got 1 or 2 other ride spaces they could deal with. Cause if they're having 1 or 2 days off a week, you know, you've literally got 1 ride to work with. And what are you going to give? You're probably going to give them endurance. So if that person gets a coach, maybe they're skipping one of the club rides to do their own session, which is fine. But that can weigh on them mentally because they probably want to go and do the social ride. So there's definitely, but that person might think they want to be coached. Like, I want to improve. I want to get better. But then it's competing with the social aspect. And that doesn't really work. I mean, most people generally, I mean, a lot of people still fit in club rides, but it might be 1 or 2 a week, a Saturday morning and a Tuesday, for example. And then you've got the rest of the week to fill out. So that works in that case.
What about if you're just a weekend, you've just got your 1 weekend social ride? There's probably enough space around there.
Yeah, 100%, yep. Definitely. And also, you can kind of tell, because if you're someone that's already looking at other training plan systems or sort of picking workouts because you think that looks like a good one and putting them in, you've probably got enough time to justify actually just having a coach. So there's that. But there's something about having a coach, which is you've sort of got someone that cares about your riding. Sounds a bit weird, but like with you, for example, like Chris, I don't coach you, by the way, but you do have a coach, Dan. Like, if you didn't have a coach, I mean, your wife doesn't really want to hear your play-by-plays of your threshold session. You know, you have mates with your ride that you ride with, but they're not necessarily interested in your journey and progression. So actually obviously with a coach, you know, you've got how affecting is their training and what are their qualifications and experience and things like that. But the big part actually for having a coach is just, you've got someone that's invested in what you're doing, that you can bounce ideas off, that cares about how well your session went, cares about how well your event went. And that's real for a lot of people, that's really valuable to feel like, firstly, just for accountability point of view, but just to have that feeling that it's not just you on your own doing it, I think is really valuable. So for that writer that you were talking about in that video, like for him to have a think about, you know, do I want someone overseeing what I'm doing? And
it can be a good thing and a bad thing, Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a love-hate relationship with being coached. Everything that you said there is true and is the positive side of it. When you're in the right mindset for it, how should I describe this? Because you're right. There's an accountability. I mean, the amount of sessions that I have finished and done purely because I knew that Dan was going to look at it, judge it, and message me. Like that is, it's a sick motivation to have, but it might be the fourth or fifth interval. And honestly, if it was just Chris, I would have bailed 100%. Mm-hmm. But I knew I would have got a text or something. And it wouldn't have been, what the fuck's wrong with you? It just would have been, oh, what happened on that one? Mm. Damn. And so from that aspect, it's good. But it can wear on you. And there is, I'm obviously mostly pro coach, but it isn't for everyone. Because it can wear on you, not necessarily when things are going bad, but just there is sometimes there's points in your life that you don't want someone judging everything that you do on the bike. You want to be able to switch that off. And it can also be quite, not invasive, but it's a bit weird sometimes that this person's looking at your kind of secret life almost, or your kind of personal metrics and things. And that can be a step for people to take, to get used to. Mm. And I don't know whether people push back on you for that particular reason, but I certainly know a couple of years ago, Dan and I separated at a moment. And it was just purely that. I couldn't deal with the constant sort of monitoring type thing. I needed space. I needed time. But you don't know that until you try it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think – the other kind of question is I know a lot of guys who aren't coached who are really fit, strong riders, and I think they would be worse if they got coaches, some of these guys. I do think there's a certain type of – it's probably more that social type rider person that you talk about. I feel like they get so much of their –
You think they'd be worse? Lay that one out for me.
Yeah, whether they'd be worse or they just wouldn't. I feel like so much of their riding is the social aspect, the competitive social aspect, that if you took that away from them and put them on a training plan, that ultimately they wouldn't succeed in it.
But that's not getting coached. That's following a training plan. Yeah, yeah. Or following a – yeah, yes. Pretty much. Yeah, yeah. No, I can see that, yeah.
So what's your advice for old mate here?
Could I be getting a more tailored program? Could I be combining nutrition? Could I be learning more about racecraft?
So to all those questions he's asked, I'm basically going to say, with a good coach, yes. You should be able to improve faster, improve your nutrition. Yes, get to a higher level. Yes. Does that mean you should hire a coach? Well, that brings me back to the first point I made, which is, yeah, I mean, yes, that stuff's all true, but it's also, for a lot of people, it's enjoyable to have someone. Do you want someone looking over your training? Do you want someone to talk to about training-related things? Do you want someone seeing the training you're doing? It's that aspect which, because I see this discussion on forums and things, it's not just getting 3% better than you would have. I mean, yeah, that's obviously a part of it, but it's the whole other, it's the personal side of thing and feeling like you've got someone in your corner that is actually probably the part of coaching that people really enjoy most. Aside from, yeah, you'll improve ideally at a faster rate and for longer. So it's, I would really consider, if he was asking me, I'd say consider that, not just, you know, can you get more?
Can I get more?
Yeah, of course. You'd bloody think so, that a coach could get you faster than you could on your own.
Mm.
But, you know, coaches are also expensive. I mean, is paying, you know, somewhere in US dollars, you know, $180 to $400 a month. I mean, is that worth it to get, you know, potentially 2% faster? I mean, because then you go down that whole rabbit hole, but is it worth it to have someone that is invested in your training, keeps you more accountable, someone to chat with about everything, that cares how you go at an event? Like, that's really what it comes down to.
Mm.
So it's not, yes, sorry, just to wrap that up, would you enjoy having a coach? Will they make you faster? Should just be a no-brainer, yes, unless they're doing something wrong.
My answer to this bloke is 100% yes, because, I mean, he does videos about, like, his training intervals, and so he's already in that space. Like, he's talking about, oh, I'm doing hill reps and this is a threshold week. This is a tempo week. I'm like, okay, well, you're already – that's where your mind's at. You know what? Talk to a professional about it on a weekly basis and you're going to love life.
There's also something as well where you can feel, you can kind of go, well, I don't really see how I could improve my training. Someone, like, I haven't watched his video, but he's probably thinking, I'm doing all the right sessions. I got everything's, all my ducks in a row. How could I get better? There's always things when you have someone outside of what you're doing objectively looking in. There's always things that pop up, even if you feel like you're really nailing it. So there's that too. When someone's following you day to day, week to week, they can find things.
If you're watching the Neuro Show and you're gleaning training advice out of it, you're trying to, you're like waiting for some golden nugget of training advice, get a coach.
What? We barely talked about training.
I ran into someone during the week. I was like, oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, what's your training plan? Blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? Because he said he wasn't coached. He said, oh, I watch you guys and I sort of take notes. I'm like, what? What are you doing? Like, you'll be going backwards.
Does he mean my videos?
No, it was everything.
Just everything.
I was like, oh, yeah, I watch the show, I watch Jesse, yeah. I'm like, why? What are you getting from this? So if that's you, just get a coach. Far more efficient. So in this ongoing, this is like an ongoing rant or thought thread that I'm having with myself about the fashion cyclists. And every week I kind of add another element to it. So what I'll do is in like 2 months' time, is I'll edit all these comments together into a succinct like monologue about it. But okay, so where I am right now.
Was this the fashionistas?
The fashionista cyclist. Okay, okay, so last week I was saying, or the other week I was saying, oh, give them a break because they're not used to training, they haven't done any sport. So this week I've flipped and I'm going the other way. What really shits me about the fashionista is that they look like fucking pros. They look legit. Like, you turn up to a ride and a couple of these guys and girls are at the ride, you're like, oh shit, we're on today. Like, it's gonna be friggin' lit. 2 minutes in, they're not even bothering to roll turns or they're already out the back. And you've sold the wrong sort of equation here to what you are. You've turned up looking absolutely mint, ready to roll, and you've given me nothing. It's almost as though I need the return of the mammal. I need the return of just the sloppy Fondo jersey, because at least then we kind of can gauge coming into the ride where everyone's at. Now when everyone's turning up with aero socks and the absolute latest and greatest, doing 150 watt turns, I've got no idea. I've got no idea what I'm in for. So that's where I'm currently at with the fashionista, right? You are selling me the wrong output. All right? You got any addition to this? Or am I just burying myself week out?
I mean, I've seen it because especially here, not just the fashion, but the leanness.
Yeah.
Like, how many
they're
like
athletic, you see, cut. They're like,
yeah.
They're, as I said, they look like athletes. They look like pros, like leaner than me, way leaner than me. And they're like, you're not doing anything. Freaking rip in. You I think that's what it is. Like, I just see them and I'm like, you could be, you should be. Look at you. I mean, these guys aren't 40 or 50. Most of them in their late 20s or in their 20s. I'm like, you should be ripping. Come on. I want to see snot. I want to see it all hang out. None of this just nose breathing and not doing anything and looking good.
Yeah. I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna let you go on that one.
I'm on board. Next week I will flip.
Fashionista update.
Okay. I will flip into a new equation. Yes. So next week, can I quickly just talk about what I'm up to this weekend? We got time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got a bit of time.
Yep.
I'm doing a bike race this weekend. Grafton to Inverell. So 235 k's. It's over 3,000 meters of climbing, but basically that's all in one big chunk, right in the middle. So I'm doing that. The only kind of points of note I thought coming into it, I'm kind of hoping to do a video from this. That's maybe another point. I'm trying to get them to shoot some footage of it to make that feasible. We'll see. But I'm going to run the one by. So I thought that was
finally.
Finally,
it gets a run.
I was thinking about how I talk about this today, because I couldn't not run it, really. I mean, I've sort of made this bed. I can't bail on it twice because, well, no, I could, but I'm not going to. I'm not worried about – so there's a big climb in it, but it's a Gibraltar range, which – average is kind of 5-6%. It's a pretty fast climb. The steeps are a bit kind of at the bottom of it. But it's not the maximums and the minimums of the gearing that ultimately probably would be the reason I'm shuffling about it. It's just the gaps in the gears towards the top end. Now, I have put a 1036 on to do this.
That was my big concern, the jumps in the gears.
Yeah, so I basically go, so it's 36. I don't really see myself in the 36 very often, maybe on Cuddle Creek potentially, but then it goes 33, 28. So it's just that gear shift right there that's a bit of a kunk. And I'm used to it now, so I do find myself kind of shifting between that state of affairs a little bit. But I honestly... once I get over that climb, I think it turns into an advantage for me from them.
Okay.
Yeah.
An advantage in that you don't have the aero drag of the front derailleur.
Yeah, I don't have that 1.5 watts or something. No, I don't know. Look, I'm. It's not going to be an advantage.
Are we going back down? Are we going to go? We're going to fully circle around why, what the advantages are again?
The advantage. It's not an advantage. I just don't think it will be a disadvantage
okay.
from there.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
No, I think you're right. Yeah. Okay. Do you have your meal plan sorted? I've got Chris on the full. He's going science experiment guinea pig mode for this. See. His day of eating, his carb load is not in meals, it's in grams of macronutrients. The pre-race meal is sorted, you know, everything planned out.
Yeah, it's just a lot of rice, really. I mean, ultimately, that's the way I'm going to approach it, rice and fruit juice.
Okay.
So I've never done this before, like you said, science experiment, which I'm kind of keen to do. Trained the sugar flask stuff, the on bike thing really well now. I've kind of got that down pat. But the next phase of that is the carb load. And yeah, you have given me, I'll flash it up on screen, but it's pretty diabolical. but I think that I've never thought about it as detailed as this. Obviously to reduce the fat as much as possible in that carb load day. Mm-hmm. Is something that I'd never really – and the fat and the fiber element to try and reduce that as much as possible is something that I'm keen to try.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond it, like in terms of what that's going to mean, yeah, like white rice, honey, that's going to be a go-to meal, white bread, jam, and then just like a lean protein chicken type thing.
Just be careful on the white bread. Even a lot of the white bread now has fiber added in it, and then it looks like white bread, but it's not. It's white bread, which they've tried to make healthier.
Mm.
So just be careful. Check the label on the white bread.
Yep. And fruit juice. So fruit juice without pulp, that kind of
just the store, just the shelf crappy juice. Yep. Okay.
So for that. That's it. And it's cool. Like I'm really excited about it because I was considering not doing this event this year. But it's honestly the only race for someone like me. It's the only race I have left in this country, really. I mean, everything else is a fondo, and we go down the rabbit hole of, oh, is it a race? Isn't it a race? This is a race. There's a podium. It's a race. And it's the only one left. So, yeah.
The sodium's the other thing, because you've never really measured how much sodium you're getting in any real event, have you? Maybe there's some electrolytes in the gel.
Yep.
It's just basically been wing it. But now you're on an amount per hour.
So you've got me, so in the 250-gram flasks of sugar, I have 350 milligrams, I think, of...
That should have been of sodium. Of sodium.
Yep.
So, and then the equivalent amount of sodium citrate to get that. That should have been per 100 gram of carbs.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Still not a super high dose of sodium. It's not like some people get 800 milligrams a gram an hour, crazy amounts. Just basically a step up from
who knows.
I don't know how much.
Yep.
So at least then you see how you feel, know how much you're getting in, and then maybe later in the year you could dial that up.
Yeah.
But this interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. First time you've ever known how much sodium you're getting in, and how many bike races have you done?
Yep. Hey, we were talking about it during the week, and you're like, "How much did you use last time?" I'm like, I use these gels, and you're like, they don't have any in there.
Yeah,
like,
there's no sodium in
there. All right, well, none then.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. Just quickly on the video thing. So obviously I made a video for Peaks, but that's a fondo, right? And, I mean, it's much easier because you can carry a camera and you can, like, talk to it and be like, we're on the climb. In a race, you can't do that. So in a 6.5-hour bike race, you're like, okay, well, I want to make something about this event. How the fuck do I do that? So obviously one thing is, okay, well, you take a camera or something with you to, like, hopefully snag a race-winning move that happens around you, and that becomes maybe the story of the video. You can kind of try and lean on the event organizers to give you some footage. That's going to be a challenge. Like, there's like one moto I've said, I can give you my phone. Can you like carry that with you and like shoot some video of it? So then we can talk about the race, because there's no like TV camera following you or anything like that. Maybe some of the other athletes, maybe they run bike cameras, and then you're kind of leaning on them for a bit of like, well, footage of stuff happening. So I don't know what, I would really like to, because as I said, it's literally one of the last bike races in Australia. I'd like to make this something that gets a bit of promotion. But then, like, that's a whole other rabbit hole, because I spent freaking 6 years trying to make people care about it, and actually people don't actually care about it. But my question more is, what's a really good example of a amateur bike race video that people have seen recently? A road race. I'm talking about a gravel race. That you can kind of use as a template.
The race organizers just need to stick a moto in front of your division. Basically follow the leaders and just have a GoPro on the back. Rig up a GoPro and just press the button every. But I mean, it's easy for us to say that because we make videos. But if you're the race organizer and you're like, oh, Chris wants a camera, a moto with a camera rigged on it with a GoPro, they're probably like,
what?
Like you're speaking gibberish.
And the camera's probably like 300 meters in front on a GoPro. And so it's on wide angle. And then you're like, okay, well, what's that ant doing over there?
It needs someone. You're probably not going to have time to sort of go and look at the set. Mm. I can see why it just never happens, because these events don't have media teams.
Because I sent them the video of so that gravel race in the US, the Great Southland or whatever it was. It had like a vehicle with the lead group, and it was filming like back at them. But it was basically like it was moto. It was like a draft for the lead riders.
Yeah,
they were kind of sitting on and being able to kind of get a draft off it. But it gave great footage.
Yeah,
but yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Well, I will run that little chesty thing and kind of see if we can snag something from there.
Yep.
So here we go.
Sounds good.
All right, Jesse. Thank you very much for your time this week.
Thanks for listening.
We will see you all next week.
See you then.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.